Above all, remember that because I fail to state that a thing or person is there, it does not follow that they do not exist. These realms are so vast that no spirit knows more than a part of them. Before we part, are there any questions you wish to ask me? J. W. Do you have light and darkness here? H. J. L. Not as you understand the words, for this is not a material world, therefore material light has no place here. But there is a kind of spiritual darkness. In hell it is utter darkness, for there is no belief. As to what is here, look, open your eyes, see. Suddenly I perceived we were in a kind of twilight or soft evening light. Here we do not perceive so clearly as those who do believe, therefore we are in this twilight. But as we progress the light becomes stronger. The light, if so you can call it, is within ourselves. We must part now. He began to fade and grow indistinct, then I was alone. Gone West, Chapter 4, Two Strange Incidents. I was not sure whether the following dream really formed a continuation of my trance vision of Uncle, or whether it was just an ordinary dream. It was, however, so vivid and peculiar that I entered it. The duel, I dreamt I was clad in a light blue costume of the time of Charles I, and was standing in the hall of a large Jacobean house. The furniture was of that period. Suddenly there was a fierce hammering at the hall door. A man's servant opened it, and I saw a man on horseback. He was clad in black, and his beard was black and cut rather short and square round his face in a peculiar manner. His face was very white, and on his head was a tall fur cap. He rushed into the hall and challenged me to a duel. I drew my rapier, which had a jeweled handle, as he drew his. He then snatched up a short sword or long dagger, broad towards the hilt, but with a fine point, and with this parried the thrust from my rapier. My servant cried, "The Italian method," and slipped into my left hand a similar dagger. I can distinctly remember the jar each time our swords were caught on the broad part of the daggers. For, at length my blade slipped over his and ran him through the shoulder. He then declared that he would go, but suddenly slipped into the house again and snatched up some papers which were on an oak chest nearby. With these he turned and ran into the garden. Furious at this treachery, I sprang after him and ran him through the body. My blade entered his back between the shoulder blades and came out a little lower down in his chest. He fell and gasped out his life in a few minutes among the flower beds. I fell on the path sobbing and lamenting. As I lay there, I saw the villagers looking through the gates and the servants picking up the body of the dead man. I have a very clear recollection of the intense grief I felt. Then I dreamt that I awoke from this dream and saw a picture of a sword, the very one I had used in the fight. I thereupon sprang from bed, the one in our room, and going to the chest of drawers found there a piece of paper. I thereon jotted down in pencil the chief points in my dream lest I should forget it. As a matter of fact I had not really awakened, and in due course awoke in bed. There was no pencil or paper on the chest of drawers. I did not see how this dream could have any connection with Uncle, but determined to ask him. J. W. On January 30th, at 2:50 p.m., Blanche sees H. J. L. Blanche was leaning out of the dining room window and looking into the garden, when she got very excited and declared that she saw the big granddad. He was wearing his black skull cap on his head, and said, "Hello, Chickabiddy." He came floating down from a blue patch high in the sky and took hold of her right wrist and tried to pull her up to heaven. She pulled, and he let go and went to various parts of the garden, and looked over the whole place by going up to a big rock on the hill behind the house. November 7, 1916. Have just seen, in the Tower of London, the exact counterpart of the dagger with which I parried his rapier. They are quite different from any dagger I had ever seen before, and were doubtless intended so to be used. Gone West, she described all this, as it happened, to her mother, who was in the room, pointing in the various directions as the figure changed its position. Mrs. Ward says she seemed perfectly genuine at the time. She repeated it very accurately to me the same evening. She said, "Hello, Grandad," in answer to his greeting. He looked at her with a smiling laugh. And he appeared to be moving round the house and garden. J. W. This is an accurate summary of what took place at about 2:50 p.m. C. W. Blanche is 4 years, 3 months old. Gone West. Chapter 5, The Officer, January 31st. At Sheffield, Letter 6, at 7 p.m., by H. J. L. Questions written down. 1. Officer's name? 2. Had your dream anything to do with you? 3. Did you come to Blanche on Friday? I am here, and will begin by answering the questions first. Number 3, I did see Blanche. I thought I should like to see where you lived, never having been there. It was my natural attraction, not any deliberate intention of mine that caused the pull. I'm trying to write more closely, as Mr. K. asks, but it is not easy yet. Number 2, the dream is curious, as it has nothing to do with me, but is the theme which haunts a friend of mine here. He killed a Pole who had saved his life during the 30 Years' War on the continent. Afterwards, the man entered the secret service of the parliamentarians. His grief was because he killed his benefactor, but he had to, as the man was stealing papers which would have implicated many in a plot to place Charles II on the throne. Why you saw it I can't say, but you evidently did, and since it was his mind picture, identified yourself with him. As to question 1, the officer absolutely refuses to give you his name, and I think his reasons are good. He shall give you them in his own words. I am standing by, so there is no danger. At this point, Mr. K. informs me, my whole manner changed, I became excited, also the way in which I held the pencil changed. The officer. The writing is quite different here. Give my name? No. No. I will give you the reason, though. I have a daughter, isn't it bad enough that she should have my blood in her veins, poor devil? But that she should become known as the daughter of a murderer. No one knows that I murdered those men. If it was once known, what chance would she have in life? Who would marry her? And what of my poor wife? No, if what I write isn't worth your while, do without it, but you'll be unwise. I want to do some good, not harm, to my wife and child. They say I must stop. Mr. L. is going to take control now. Mr. K. saw the change take place in my manner, etc., ed. H. J. L. I am sorry he would not give his name, but I think he was right. But as I knew he would not, I have persuaded the spirit who has gone to the set above to give his as evidence. He has no reason to fear that it will do harm. He shall introduce himself. Hear my manner and way of. Holding the pencil changed so markedly that Mr. K. placed a cross against the line thus, X. This is the first time I have taken control, and so will introduce myself and will give you details so that you can prove me. Mr. Rell has asked me to help in this important plan of his, and I am to describe, so far as I can, what this set is like, that is the one above that in which they who only half believed are. I was Dr. J. B. P. Principal Emeritus, Congregationalistical. I founded the B. L. B. Dash, was joint editor of the Dash, Dash, and wrote the Dash. I was born December 17, 1830, and died January 26, 1911.5, Mr. K. investigated these facts and found every statement made was correct. We none of us knew what emeritus meant, but looked it up, and found it meant retired or pensioned. As relations of Gone West, is this enough evidence? My friends would probably never believe that I only half believed, and I hardly realized that this was the case myself. But it was due to overmuch study of theology. I lost, or nearly lost, the substance for the shadow. Now goodbye. Mr. Rell is in charge of us, and I shall write as he instructs, giving you, I hope, much useful information which I pray may guide your steps to the realms of light. God bless you all four. Mr. K. marked the following with X to show the change of control. I take control again to close this letter, H. J. L. In the next I shall start giving you the detailed account of my death and first experiences here. The officer and Mr. P. will not appear in the next. Rest half an hour. H. J. L. This man is still alive, and would resent the use of his name. I have been reluctantly compelled to suppress these details, which were absolutely convincing to us. Gone West, Chapter 6, H. J. L. describes his death. Letter 7. Same night, 8 p.m., I became unconscious and after a time recovered, or so it seemed. Indeed, my mind suddenly became clear, but I began to feel a heavy weight. Gradually I realized that this weight was slipping away from me, or rather, I was sliding out from it, as if someone were drawing his hand out from a wet glove. Then I began to feel dizzy at one end, so to speak, and then I began to see again. I saw once more the room and the people in it. Then I was free. Free, I saw myself lying stretched out on the bed, and from my mouth came, as it were, a cord of light. It vibrated for a moment, then snapped, and from my mouth came away. At that moment someone said, "I think he has gone," or if they did not say it, they thought it. Then I realized what I looked like for the first time. How different from what I had always seen in my looking glass. But was it I? It looked so strange. But even as I looked I was aware of an awful feeling of cold. Mr. K. and the others say that while the next few lines were being written, I exhibited all the signs of suffering intense cold. I shivered and moaned, "Cold, cold, most piteously. Cold. Cold. Piercing feeling of cold. It pierced me through and through. Nothing I can write can give you any idea of that cold. The icy blast pierced me as no earthly wind ever did or can. I was a naked soul, no body, nothing to give me warmth. I shuddered and shivered like this for many a seeming age. Suddenly it seemed to grow a little less. I was aware of a presence. How can I describe him, this glorious being? Then I could hardly grasp any clear idea. But having since been in his company constantly, I can describe him a little better. Even now he seemed to change every moment. At one instant I seem to know him well, at another he changes and I can get no clear idea of his face or form. He shimmers and shines and flashes, and seems as if he were made of fire. His robes, his face, his whole form is as it were fire. Yet that word gives but a faint idea, nor would the word light be any nearer. All color, too, is there. This glorious one is my teacher. Hardly had I perceived him, when the whole room in which I stood and the people who were there seemed to dissolve and fade away. Lo! I was in the most exquisite scenery imaginable. Every lovely spot I had ever visited was there, and countless others which I had never seen, beautiful rolling hills clothed with grass and trees, real trees, yes, and animals and even butterflies, flowers, too, of every description, not only English wild and garden flowers, but all manner of foreign plants, orchids and so forth, the like of which I never saw on earth. Nor did they seem strange or out of place, nor yet the sight of tropical palms and English oaks growing side by side. On earth it would certainly have seemed so, but here it appeared quite natural. Where am I? I thought, and no sooner had the idea entered my mind, if indeed one can use the word, than the shining one seemed to answer. You are in the land of after death. Are you surprised that there are trees and animals here, and even grass? Know that here comes every thought which you have ever thought, soon also you shall know that is so, to your sorrow, and, further, here come also the spiritual forms of all that ever lived. Thus is our spirit world built up and thus it constantly increases. All that lives, no matter how humble it be, comes here of itself. All thoughts come here. Hence you recognize many beauty spots you knew on earth. Hence also the palm and the oak, and the orchid which you never saw. You have much to learn. Gone west, do all thoughts live? I cried, or thought. Even as the idea formed, the whole scene was blotted out from my perception. A horror seemed to grip me. Mr. K., etc., declare that here I again began to exhibit signs of acute anguish. Ed. Like a hideous nightmare. On every side visions seemed to press me round. They weighed me down. I, who but a moment before had seemed so light, now seemed to be crushed under an intolerable weight. I saw them not with mortal eyes, I perceived them with my whole being. I call them visions, but they were in real bodily form, like tableaus, moving and acting again before me all my past. My past deeds crowded before me, not in any order, but like a dream, all at once. Oh! The anguish as once more rose up deeds long since forgotten. Little or great, nothing was now forgotten. At last, after what seemed countless ages, an inspiration seemed to seize me, and I prayed. I had not done so for years and years, but now I prayed, O God, help me. And as I prayed, really prayed, slowly the wild chaos began as it were to sort itself out. It, as it were, took a kind of chronological order, and the scenes took the form, as it were, of a street which stretched far away, far beyond my ken, and they will go on increasing as I progress till they reach to the judgment seat of God. And among them I saw many visions which came as a relief to my tired soul, little acts of kindness which I had long forgotten, times when I had resisted temptation. So I found, as it were, my location. J. L. Witness, K. Gone West, Chapter 7, How the Living Appear to the Departed, Vision in Trance on the Night of February to ND, 1914, H.J.L. Ask your friends to keep a watchful eye on you from the time that the officer takes control till the time when I resume it, particularly during the periods of rest. Pay careful heed to these points, as there are certain risks which must be faced in this kind of work. You are quite safe so long as you obey my instructions to the letter. You will receive a letter 6 from Mr. K. tomorrow, Tuesday, confirming the details regarding Dr. K., so I trust you are now quite satisfied. With regard to what the officer writes, I can promise you every word is true, but he, too, only speaks of what he knows. There may be depths below that to which he sank, and doubtless other spirits have not all had the same experience, though in hell. What he will tell you explains much of the common forms of occult phenomena, that is death portents, haunted houses plaguing, and so forth. Don't be afraid, we will stand by you, and so long as you obey my instructions you will be all right. Have you any questions? J. W. When you are doing the automatic writing, can you see those who are present? H.J.L. underscore yes, but they look rather different to what they do to you. We see them as they are, not as they seem to be. Thus it often happens to us that those whom earth folk consider beautiful seem ugly, while those who look homely to you, to us seem beautiful. As a rule, we see the souls rather than the bodies. The bodies are the like a grey mass, as in the Röntgen ray photos the bones show through the flesh. If we greatly wish we can sometimes see the bodies, but even still the people cannot deceive us into thinking them beautiful when they are not. Their spiritual ugliness shows through their physical beauty. We see, too, all the spirits who have been attracted round, whether they are good spirits or evil, for some people and places have the power of attracting spirits, sometimes good and sometimes evil. Now I must return to my task here. H. J. L. 6 This I did receive. Gone West, Chapter 8, A Plan of the Spirit Plane. 6th Transvision of H. J. L. by J. W. On Monday, February 9th, 1914, H. J. L. For your general convenience let me tell you that this realm is divided as follows: 1. Belief with works. 2. Belief without works. 3. Half-belief. 4. Unbelief. Hell. When the soul has reached the highest plane of the first division, it goes through something that is akin to a second death, for there it leaves behind its spiritual body. But the soul who attains to that state rejoices in its coming relief. It does not fear it as the mortals do death, for those souls who are not yet ready do not cross the barrier. Once they have passed into the next realm, they cannot return. There are, including earth, 7 such realms, of which the highest is to be with God. We who are here know only of the realm we are in, which we will call the 6th, the 7th being Earth, which includes the astral plane. We cannot go to the 5th until our time has come, and then we cannot return. Still, to this rule are certain exceptions. Very rarely messengers are sent down to us from the realms above, but this only happens for some good reason, and is comparable to the visible and audible return of one who is dead to Earth. The other and more usual method is through a medium. Just as we communicate through you, so those in the fifth realm use a spirit in the higher planes of the sixth through whom to communicate. Any message from the fifth realm would thus have to pass through two mediums to reach Earth. Each plane in the sixth realm is divided into various divisions, and sometimes these divisions are divided into spheres. I will show you a kind of diagram, so that you can grasp it better. Then a huge sheet seemed to appear before me, with the preceding diagram written in lines of fire. The sheet appeared gray. Gone west, diagram of spirit plane. H. J. L. Continued, of course this is only a diagram, and, further, I have made it as simple as I can. Thus I have, of course, not attempted to show every small sect, but only the chief ones, yet you must remember that every religion is there. The diagram refers to our state or condition, not to place, which does not exist with us. Further, there are many fluctuations and cross currents which I cannot show easily. Thus, Sufism has obvious similarities to pantheism, and Mormonism to Mohammedanism. So, too, souls fluctuate within their plane. Thus the officer sometimes reaches division 2, but he is usually very decidedly in division number 1. I am in division 2. As you reckon time, I was but a few days in division I, but to me it seemed many years. Here what I call soul study is the chief business, our relaxation is what was our work on earth. This brings us into touch with men of similar occupations and tastes, though differing in religious matters. Gone west, thus we may compare this side to a series of circles. Again on the screen of gray I saw this diagram of fire. Spheres of interest. Thus I get to know a man who is keen on archaeology because we are both interested in architecture, though from somewhat different points of view. I need not labor the point, as I see you grasp it. Here, you will see, the man who is interested in absolutely only one thing here, as on earth, will get to know far fewer people. These circles keep men in touch who otherwise would be quite separated owing to different religious outlook. Thus the modern Roman Catholic and the ancient Greek philosopher may meet in the Greek spheres, as these circles are often called, both being interested in Greek culture from a different standpoint. While we are in the region of half-belief, the religious divisions are only faintly visible, but when one gets into the set above one finds them very clear. You must first grasp a few truths firmly before you are ready to absorb others. Each sect grows towards the others as men progress, because while they retain the vital truth which has called them into existence, all religions lose their errors as the believer mounts higher towards God, who is himself truth. A point that may not be quite clear is that in Division 3 of our set the first messengers start. These go, down for the most part, as far as the schools. They are not the glorious ones of fire who go down into hell itself. They come from far above. The risk for our people would be too great. Even in the schools the earth pull is so strong that the messengers cast back their own progress for many earthly years. The babe schools are for those children who die too young to learn anything. They learn to believe, and as recreations they learn what you call work. Only it is, of course, on a higher plane. No need to learn to read or write, for example. Gone west, J. W. Who teaches them? H. J. L. From Division 3 go down many women who for some reason were never mothers on earth. Thus they satisfy the primal instinct of women. Also schoolmasters and parsons go there. Often they go down for what you would call a space of time, and then return to their work in Division 3, for teaching is not work here, but recreation. Now do not turn my diagrams into a cast iron system. Remember there is far more flux here than on earth. Now I have told you enough for the time being. Is there anything you wished to say? J. W. What is the purpose of the school for those who have progressed? And why is it that this school is separate from that for the babes? H. J. L. They must get some vague ideas before they can even half believe. As yet they simply have a vague longing to believe. They must also learn to realize the evilness of the scenes which rise up before them from their former life. They are like babes in knowledge, and must learn, but you would not have them mix with the innocent babes, would you? Now goodbye. Gone West. Chapter 9. The Passing of a Saint. Letter from H. J. L. February 14th. I have taken control. I have been to see a death from this side. My guide took me, we entered a room, I cannot explain exactly how, but we simply found ourselves there. It was a large, airy room, nicely but not very expensively furnished. Outside there was a garden. But, being winter, of course there was not much life in it. On the bed was an old man about 70 years, a parson. My guide spoke. This was a faithful minister of the truth as far as he knew it, one of those souls who come straight to the realm of belief, in the land where men believed and acted up to their beliefs. He is the Roman Catholic priest of this parish. Over his bed hung a Sister of Mercy, and beside him knelt a priest, who was giving him extreme unction. Suddenly the room became full of beautiful spirits. They filled the room and stretched far out into space. "Who are these?" I asked. "All the fair souls he has helped to save. See this woman, she was a poor fallen sister whose feet he turned to the paths of truth. That was a foolish boy who, but for him, would be in the set below yours. That father would have driven that girl, his daughter, onto the streets, but he, the priest, Ed, took her to a nunnery, and by degrees softened the father's heart. Now both of them are in the realm of belief, of those who acted up to those beliefs. All these have come to welcome their pastor and friend." Then I was aware of a still more glorious being. "Kneel," whispered my guide. All that glorious company sank on their knees, I humbly with them. "Who is he?" I whispered. "He is the teacher and ruler of that realm. He comes to take him home. Look." Slowly from the body a light seemed to rise, strongest at the head. It was almost golden, but had a touch of blue in it. Gradually it seemed to take the form of a head and shoulders, and slowly I saw this figure of light draw out from its fleshy covering. Soon it was clear, and at once a glad cry broke from the lips of the hundreds who were present. "Father, your children greet you with joy and gladness," they seemed to say. And the good priest smiled on them, and, as he did, I noticed the body too seemed to smile. The spirit turned and blessed those earthly ones who were watching by the bed. Then the cord of flame, which had been growing longer and longer, snapped, and I heard a wild cry of sorrow from the mourners below, but it was quite drowned in the song of rejoicing which burst from the lips of the spirit throng. The great spirit took him by the hand and seemed to say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant, thou hast been faithful in a little, now thou shalt rule over many. I make thee the pastor of all these whom on earth thou didst save," and the wild song of joy which burst from the assembled crowd still rings in my ears. Then we were alone, I and my guide, and the humble mourners, but I knew it was well, and I too went away rejoicing. I shall write no more. Thank all five who have helped tonight. I hope the two newcomers are now satisfied as to the necessity for the officer's work, and also realize the full aim of this book. Again thanking you, yours, H. J. L. Those present were Mr. and Mrs. K., Mrs. S., Mr. and Mrs. J. February 10th, 1914. Gone West, Chapter 10, describes the school to which he went and what he learnt there. Seventh Trance Dream, February 16th. H. J. L. Well, Jack, do you wish to ask me any questions? J. W. What has happened to that beautiful tract of country you spoke of when you had just died? H.J.L. Open your eyes. Then it seemed as if my eyes were opened and behold, I was in the most lovely country. The light was of the kind one sees on a summer evening. Over the distant horizon the red glow of sunset was just visible, tinging the hilltops and reflected in the water of many streams and lakelets. We were standing side by side in an avenue of trees, tall and splendid. I saw H. J. L. quite plainly. He was not dressed in the clothes I had seen him in when he had appeared clairvoyantly, that is earthly, but in long flowing robes of white which seemed as if they were really part of his body in some mysterious way. A soft faint light seemed to come out from his body, impossible to describe. Looking again at the landscape, it seemed to me to contain everything beautiful of natural scenery. The view grows wider. I perceive lakes and snow-capped mountains, rushing rivers, and lo, beyond all, the sea. But over all was a soft evening light. "Do you have day and night here?" I asked him. "No.